Are you sick of government lackeys who say you didn't build that?
Are you tired of elitists who think you need a government permission slip for everything? Everything you do is an A to B conversation, and the government should see their way out of it. Create true free markets by adopting the BIPCOT No Government License. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows use or modification of any product, service, or software except by governments or government agents.
Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Peaceful Anarchism on the Voluntary Virtues Network and theseedsofliberty.com and theconsciousresistance.com. So today we have Brittany Schaefer, who is a voluntarist and an author. Illustrator as well?
A little bit. I mean, the other artist did more than I did in this one, so I don't want to take too much credit for that.
So author of the comic book, The Urban Yogini, A Superhero Who Can't Use Violence, and we'll discuss that. It's a pretty cool thing. And also her article for LouRockwell.com that was published there. First They Came for the Anti-Vaxxers, which is really a contentious topic of discussion for a lot of people. So, of course, we have to write about it and talk about it naturally. But Brittany, thanks a lot for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I talked to you first in the Seeds of Liberty, and we had a great conversation. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to get you on my show because I'd love to help you. Anybody who's using their outlet, their specific platform for spreading voluntarism and liberty, and I try to do as much as possible to help them get more exposure.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, definitely. Let me just mention your websites real quick. So Brittany.com is your personal, I guess, blog, right? And then you also have an account on Liberty.me, as well as, you can find her on Facebook as Brittany Schaefer, and also on Twitter at Brittany. So please get into your Urban Yogini comic book and what it's about and why you wrote it.
Yeah, so this is Urban Yogini, if you can see her there. Uh-huh. It hit me once, we watch a lot of superhero stuff around here, and yeah. And it struck me, I think watching a Batman, one of the, which, are brilliant, the newer ones are brilliant, and it just struck me, there's so much of the narrative is about, superheroes combating these, bizarre supervillains, these individual supervillains or organized crime or something. When you look at the world and look at who the real criminals are, the vast majority of them are part of the state. Mm. So wouldn't it be great to have a superhero who actually fought the state, who fought, agents of the state?
Yeah.
And so I just started thinking about that, started sketching out some ideas and some episodes and things. And I actually came up with the first episode, I want to say like 5 years ago. I think I actually wrote and illustrated that like 5 years ago. And then a couple years ago, wrote up the rest of this, which is like, it's like a 90 page, book. And got some artists to help finish the rest of it because it would have taken me forever to do all the illustrations. So, published at the end of last year, and there are more episodes in the pipeline. I can't say when those will come out, but this is the start.
Yeah, I was thinking about it earlier today. I was telling one of my homeschooling friends about it, and saying, a superhero that can't use violence, and then I realized that it's funny you just mentioned Batman, because that's the exact one I said, because Batman, his specific thing is he can't kill people, right? When he And that's his specific
code.
And so he has to do everything he can to, I guess he restricts people or restrains people, but he just doesn't kill people. So how would you say, like, for example, this is different than that? I mean, I know like Batman, he's extremely status, going along with the police and helping the police, yeah, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. This is different because, so what happens is Urban Yogini, and let me get a little picture of her. So what happens is she's this normal young woman, living in the big city, and she gets into yoga and starts her pranic forces are unleashed. and she's taken over by, so she witnesses police brutality. And the first time it happens, she just feels helpless and upset, and there's nothing she can do. It happens a little later, and something else, you know, she starts sort of spinning out of control, and she's taken over by the force of Urban Yogini. So what happens is this spiritual entity sort of takes her over when she sees injustice, but it's limited by the yamas, the yogic yamas, which are sort of restrictions. They're spiritual practice restrictions. And one of them, I think one of the fundamental ones, is ahimsa, which is the restriction of non-harming. You're not allowed to harm other beings. So it's not really the NAP. It's not really non-initiation of force. And in fact, she does use force. She kind of like Batman, in her first sort of episode, she picks the officers up and puts them up on a windowsill where they can't harm anybody. So she's able to move people around and do things, but she can't harm them. In fact, when she tries to, she can't do it. She can't make contact. She can't physically do the action. And so that's her restraint. And again, it's not, part of it just sort of happened naturally because I started thinking of the yoga theme, but I also didn't really want to do sort of an NAP primer. I didn't want to turn this into a kind of, you know, superhero how-to for voluntarists. It's more to bring up the issues of violence and harm and when that's justified, when it's not justified. And also, you know, what else can you do what can you do that's not harmful if you're committed to justice, if you're committed to rectifying evil and that kind of thing. So it's really more to raise the issue and to get people questioning, you know, their support of violent institutions or their support of violence that they may not think of as violence. You know, in one part of the book, she's trying to sign a petition. The petition is to regulate some industry, and she can't connect the pen to the paper because she can't figure it out. She doesn't know what she wants to sign it. She can't do it. And later on, she figures out, oh, you know, there's violence inherent in that. I'm not allowed to do that.
Can you please extend that power to all politicians? That would be
if only, and they wouldn't be politicians then. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
That reminds me of this meme. It's, you know, you see a politician and a pen and then a soldier, and it says, "More lives can be saved by taking away the pens from politicians than taking away the guns from, you know, people."
And
it's amazing. It's so true, and it's so sad because, you know, if you think about it, politicians, or I mean any kind of dictator or tyrant in history, they don't actually kill people. You know, they give the orders.
Except in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess. But still, I mean, the amount of people that an individual tyrant can kill is like minuscule compared to, you know, when you give an order to hundreds of thousands of order followers, and then, you know, genocide happens, right? It's really amazing how, you know, we give these people so much attention. And, you know, that's how they get their power, yet they really don't do much. It's really the people who obey their insane, maniacal, or, you know, whims.
Yeah, I mean, I think the more I think about it and the more I see what's going on, I just feel like the most dangerous vice, the most damaging thing we've got going on as human beings is our propensity for obedience and to just trust authority and, you know, respect authority. That's the worst part of our nature, and it's everywhere. You know, even in, you know, we consider ourselves to be an advanced sort of intellectual civilization, but look at how we behave. Look at how people just blindly follow, you know, their leaders, anybody in authority, how they listen to those in authority without really questioning what they're saying. I mean, it's deadly.
Yeah, and so going back to Batman, I was thinking about, because I saw this one podcast this guy did, and the question was, is Batman a statist? You know, because you know, yeah, he doesn't use violence, and, you know, he protects the innocent, and, you know, so it seems like he's a good guy, right? But then you think about it, he's helping to enforce laws, and he's helping the police, the law enforcement class, you know.
Right. But does he ever help to enforce victimless crime laws? Like, is he only going after murderers
and
the psycho killers? I'm trying to think of examples where. I know I've been pissed off at him for saying what they were. Because I think of him as mostly going after the real criminals.
The victims.
Yeah, but is that true? You know, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he treads in the middle a little bit, but yeah, I mean, you know, I think that begs the question. You know, is there a good cop, right? And what is a good cop? Because if you choose to become a law enforcement officer, you have decided to enforce all of the laws, right? So in a sense, you have to be a robot to just enforce all of the laws. But then if you ask a law enforcement officer that, or you talk to somebody who wants to be law enforcement, they say no, they have discretion. So are you saying that according to your mood that day, you can choose to enforce whichever, like, thousands of laws, you know, you deem fit according to if you had your coffee or not that morning?
Wow.
You're right?
Yeah, but, I mean, he's probably right. I mean...
They do, right.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think once you sign up for that game, I do believe some people go into that with good intentions, but it's kind of like signing up to be an SS officer. You know, you're signing up for something that's fundamentally evil, or a big chunk of it is. And it's a dilemma, because what if you really, you know, what if in your heart you really do want to, you know, fight real crime, you know, protect people against murder and assault and kidnapping and all that kind of thing? You know, what in this world, what else can you do? There's not really, because I talked in my article about the Detroit Threat Management Group, which is a private alternative. But right now, you know, there's so little of that. It's like if that's what you want to do with your life, the big opportunity for that is to sign up with this fundamentally immoral organization. So it's tough for someone who does want to be, you know, a good person protecting people from crime. It's a tough choice. And yet, you know, I don't think signing up for an organization that imprisons people for nonviolent and for victimless crimes, I don't think that's a satisfactory answer. I don't think that absolves you of guilt.
Yeah, I was just talking about this today with the same friend about victimless crimes, because my mother just got a ticket, you know, going 78 and a 55, and it was like a $230 ticket.
Lock her up.
Yeah. and so, you know, my mother's she's a Democratic Socialist, Bernie Sanders supporter, and, you know, we get into some interesting heated arguments. but of course, you know, once I point out the idea of victimless crimes, you know, she defends it, saying, well, you know, we need these laws because if people are driving crazy, you know, other people can get hurt and all this kinds of stuff. And I'm like, well, you know, the idea, the idea of, is there a victim, right? So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is, like, if a police officer is doing something that if a regular person did it is immoral, how can that be justified?
Right.
If you can't pull somebody over, or let's say you see somebody with a broken taillight, right? And you as a regular person say, you know what, this person needs to fix their taillight. So you tailgate them, you harass them, you shout at them, say pull over. And if they don't pull over, what are you gonna do? Drive them off the road and kill them or tase them, or like, do you feel justified in doing that?
Right. Well, and that's why the Detroit Threat Management example was so sort of instructive, because what Dale, the guy who runs it, was saying is that, you know, everything, because they're a civilian organization, because they're private people, they're not entrusted with these special powers you get from the badge.
Yeah.
You know, they're not allowed to do any of that stuff. So they have to be really careful. Everything they have to do, everything they do has to be in accordance with the law. They can't go around harassing people. They can't prosecute victimless crimes. They can't do anything even against a real criminal that is illegal. They have to be very careful with what they do. And what's interesting is they've been very successful, and they haven't had any of their people die in action. So you know, they're doing something right. And I think that something is accountability. I think that something is that, you know, when the law applies to everyone and you don't get any special privileges because you're, you know, entrusted with enforcing it, things just work better.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so excited. I'm actually, I set a date to interview the guy, Dale Brown.
Oh, awesome.
I'm so excited. Awesome. Yeah. Cause I've heard him, he was interviewed by, I think, Tom Woods did a great interview with him. Jeff Berwick also on Entercast.
Great.
Yeah, so the guy is really getting around and I'm really happy
That's
to see
awesome.
It. So yeah.
In my crazy schedule, I'm planning to do a follow-up article sort of looking into his claims and, you know, sort of digging into, you know, well, did crime really go down that much in these neighborhoods and just getting some details on that.
Right.
There's so much in that. There's so much. It's such a huge story. I'm glad that's getting around.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the idea of, you know, Cell 411, right? The app.
Right. Yeah.
So combining him and Cell 411 and, you know, what can that achieve? And actually, do you remember, I think it was in Jeff Berwick's interview when he was saying actually that he doesn't like the idea of Cell 411 because he says that you know, if you're having a heart attack or something's happening to you that a trained professional would understand, but you're just their friend, and so you know a friend is trying to help, but in trying to help you don't really know what to do. You might be unintentionally hurting the person, you know, which is kind of true. But at the same time, your dog's not going to die, and
right. Yeah. I mean, it also kind of depends where you live. I mean, in my neighborhood, we've had to call 911 a couple times for medical things, and I don't worry about it. We live in a nice neighborhood. You know, cops don't go around shooting dogs and stuff where we are. We're lucky. I'm not sure I would. I'd still be very hesitant to call the police, but I don't mind calling paramedics. In another neighborhood, you might be better off with your untrained friend than a trained professional who's, you know, scared of you and looking for any excuse to shoot. I don't know. I mean, there are some situations where it's not such an obvious trade-off. It's good to have the option. It's good to have choices.
Yeah, like right now the only choice is 911, and you know,
yeah,
I guess there's no competition, really. And that's what we definitely need is competition.
Yeah, well, we need Uber for 911.
Say again?
We need Uber for 911.
Oh, Uber. Right. Yeah. Like I'm an acupuncturist, right? And I heard that somebody told me that there's this. Oh, it's for massage therapy. Right. I also do massage therapy, and they said there's this app where it's kind of like Uber, but for massage therapists.
Oh, interesting.
So you can request a massage therapist through this app, and they would come to your house. And
well, you know, there's also something, and I think it's only in, was it Philadelphia, or I don't think it was New York City. I think it might only be in Philadelphia, but it's an Uber-like thing for medical professionals, you know, in their off hours. And you can request some kind of, you know, obviously not open heart surgery or something like that, right. But, you know, minor stuff, outpatient stuff, stuff you might go into an office for, and they'll come to your house. They'll, you know, I think even minor emergencies, I have to, don't quote me on that, but like minor medical stuff, these people in their off hours, you know, sign up to be on call and they'll go, you know, for a fee and, you know, check out your sprained wrist or, you know, set something or, you know, just check you out, make sure you're, you know, whatever the thing is, you know, saving you a trip into the doctor, you know, just they Uberizing healthcare in a very small way.
Yeah, I do remember something. Forgot the name of it. Do you remember the name of the organization that does that?
Don't. You know what? I'm just going to do a quick look because I've got it. I may not be able to find it, but I'm just going to look in one place.
Yeah, because I do remember, I think it was Tom Woods. Yeah, that's right. It's Tom Woods. He interviewed a guy who had a company like that of medical services like that is very cheap primarily because it's like direct to the patient. You know, they have
That's another thing. So that's cash only doctors who they're just opting out of the insurance paradigm and it's cash only. Yeah, I've got a bunch of articles on that. I mean, and I've experienced that myself with a lot of our doctors. Some of our best doctors have been not necessarily cash only, but you know, independent practitioners, and more just refusing to deal with insurance, partly because it costs them so much. I mean, they have to hire a whole person just to handle the insurance BS. Yeah. And then we had one doctor tell us when Obamacare was about to pass, she sent out a note to all of her patients saying, you know, when this happens, I'm going to have to not only stop taking insurance, I need to stop putting insurance codes on my invoices because, and I'm taking her word for this. I haven't looked into it myself to see if this is how it works, but apparently, the board, not the licensing boards, but the boards, the medical boards that oversee, standards of care mm-hmm. and, that are basically looking at her to make sure she's in compliance. That board applies if your stuff is going through insurance at all. So in other words, even if you don't submit it, but if your patient submits it to insurance, you then fall under that board's scrutiny. Uh-oh. And it's all, I mean, as you know, I'm sure it's all sort of, this one size fits all standard. So anybody who's practicing anything alternative can easily, you know, run afoul of their recommendations and can get in trouble for it. And she just said, you know what? It's just not worth it. It's not worth the risk mm-hmm. to maybe, you know, run afoul of these guys. So that's entirely cash only. Not only can we not only will she not, you know, submit it to insurance, I can't even submit it to insurance anymore. So I'm seeing more and more of that just in our lives, unless it's like at a big hospital or something, more and more. And it's usually the better ones. It's the older ones, the ones who've been around for a long time and you know, have an expectation of how much independence they should have. You know, it's sad. It's like the good independent practitioners it's just getting harder and harder for them to practice. And it's like, they're being pushed out. And the new generation, I don't know what that's going to be like. I mean, younger doctors to me seem a lot more kind of indoctrinated and a lot less independent thinking. Okay. So let me just see if low cost healthcare. I'm gonna look this up and see if I can, because I do have it here somewhere. It's not worth.
Send it to me later, and I'll put it in the show notes. Yeah. It's really cool resource. But you know, I think it's a natural effect of this bloated bureaucracy that's been developing, you know, in healthcare. That eventually, you know, people are going to just opt out because, you know, it's like, I don't want to take part in that. I don't want to, you know, like you said, have to hire all these people just to process and you know, write all the paperwork. And, like, I don't want to do that. And so I think it's just the natural next step is for people to just say, no, I don't want that. Yeah. And so,
and in fact, getting back to Urban Yogini,
yeah.
In one of the next episodes down the pipeline, one of the things that happens is she runs into, there's a group that's like underground practitioners, they're underground doctors, and it's become so bureaucratized and so regulated and so threatening to anything alternative that these folks have just gone underground and they're practicing, you know, totally in secret, and you got to have like a secret handshake to get into their, you know, underground offices down in the sewer system. And so that's something I play with too.
Yeah. And I just heard a recent Tom Woods interview where he talked to this guy, I forget his name. He's an MD, and he wrote an article about how medical licensing has hindered not only hindered medical progress, but has made everything much more expensive and inaccessible to the regular person.
And
people don't realize that. Like everybody, a lot of people tend to think that, you know, we need licensing, we need standardization, you know, we got to have a basic educational, paradigm so people can learn and get the basics. But
it's so crazy. And when you look at the history of that, how that developed, you know, like the Flexner report, when that came out, it was all political. It was all because it was basically the people making drugs, people starting to make drugs, wanted to take over the system. They didn't like the competition, and they wanted to be able to set standards and exclude anybody who didn't do things their way. And I mean, it was totally political. There was no science behind it. I mean, science at that point was so, you know, medical science back then was so ridiculous anyway. The whole thing was political. There's no justification for it. And there are so many examples of, you know, within specialties in medicine, there are so many examples of private, not licensing, but accreditation boards where, you know, obviously people care about their standards of care, and you can do that privately. You can get certification from a private entity that says, yeah, this person knows what they're doing. This person did this and this and this and went to school for this long and all that stuff, as opposed to having, you know, a government sponsored entity that has the power to keep you out of business if you don't, mm-hmm. you know, do things the way they want them done and pass their certification. And it also limits the number of people out there. I mean, as well as the number of people who can operate a certain machine, you know, something anybody could be trained to operate, you know, in the period of a week, but no, you have to have gone to school for 4 years and that adds to the cost. I mean, if you add up all of the different crazy interventions in the medical world, you know, the costs are, no wonder it's so crazy expensive.
Yeah, definitely. So going along this this medical topic, can you get into your article, First They Came for the Anti-Vaxxers, and why you wrote that and what's about?
Yeah, so I wrote this a year ago, just over a year ago. I've always been skeptical of vaccines, and we did not vaccinate our kids. I looked at every individual one, and you know, there were some I considered, and it just never seemed worth it. Part of the issue for me was it's so hard to get really accurate information about vaccine injury. It's really not reported well, and by all accounts, it's very, very underreported. So I always sort of weighed things on the side of being very, very safety conscious and skeptical of that. But I had never written anything about it until there started to be just this frenzy of people calling for mandated vaccines and, you know, parents who don't vaccinate to be thrown in prison. And, you know, this idea that we're somehow putting everybody else at risk, putting other people's kids at risk. The whole conversation has really been taken over by the sort of pro-vaccine fanatics, meaning the people who benefit from selling vaccines, of course. So I wrote this article. It's pretty long. It's in depth. It goes into, or rather it's in depth, but trying, you know, covering as much ground as I can. So I talk about, just sort of the dishonesty of how this issue is presented in the media, from the fact that most of the articles, I mean, it's almost as if, I'm not saying this is what's happened, but it's almost as if the pharmaceutical companies have sent out press releases to all of the, and, you know, and contact sheets of which, you know, three people to talk to for this issue. And every single media outlet has just bought it up. And, I mean, you can read article after article where they only talk to people on the pro-vaccination side. They only interview, you know, Dr. Offit, and, you know, half the time don't mention that he makes money from the vaccine he created. I mean, it's just dishonest, you know, I don't even want to say journalistic standards because it's not even journalism. It's just PR. So I talk about that. I talk about some of the, you know, some of the standard myths, the whole, the measles frenzy is this, you know, all of a sudden measles is this thing to be terrified of. Well, in fact, you know, long before the measles vaccine came into existence, measles mortality had declined to the point where, I mean, people considered it a mild childhood disease. And in fact, there are benefits from having gone through it. I mean, as there are benefits from having gone through many diseases, that doesn't mean they're all worth, you know, you have to obviously weigh the risks against the benefits. But measles, by the time the vaccine came along, the risks were pretty small. And now it's being played up as this, you know, Ebola. I mean, and then, you know, I also talk about how, you know, in the midst of this, so I open up by talking about how my daughter and I had just been at UCLA. And as it happened, the few days we were there coincided with this outbreak they had of an antibiotic resistant bacteria, and it killed, I think, two people while we were there in the same building we were in. Mm-hmm. And in fact, drug resistant, superbugs kill about 15,000 people a year. And yet there's not this crazed outcry. There's not this, oh my God, people who overuse antibiotics should be imprisoned and quarantined. And, you know, it's just this crazy kind of selective, what are we going to be afraid of? What's the media going to tell us to be afraid of this week? And, oh, it's measles. Okay, we'll be afraid of measles. Next week it'll be chicken pox. I mean, people aren't thinking about this. I think people are just accepting blindly what's been pumped into the media. And so that was what my article was addressing.
Yeah, definitely. I have two kids, a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old. You know, they're both not vaccinated at all. And yeah,
they're sick all the time, right?
Oh my God, they're deathly ill. I mean, they're very strong kids, really strong. And you know, the way I look at it, you know, the reasons for not vaccinating for me have changed. They've evolved over the past few years. Like in the beginning, I was real focusing on you know, reading about the specific vaccines and the side effects and the autism,
right,
and all that, and you know, going into the studies and all that kind of stuff, and you know that the individual ingredients, you know, have not been tested in, you know, with kids. And so if the individual ingredients have not been tested, what about combining these? And then what about giving multiple to an infant that has like an immature immune system, immature,
brain development. Yeah,
everything. Neural development, everything. And what are the effects on that in development? It's just crazy. And then now, as I'm getting more into voluntarism and free market capitalism and all that and anarchy, now I look at it. I mean, I also still think about that, but I also think it's also about consent, and it's also about medical choice, right?
Right.
And the simple idea of good ideas don't require force,
right?
Right. So
that's a bigger issue, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. You know, if you don't have a choice in the matter, and people say this is for your own good, you immediately should question it. Immediately.
Well, and that's what's so scary about it. And not so much that they're saying it's for your own good, but that you're putting others at risk by not being vaccinated.
Yeah.
The whole idea is that, you know, somehow, you know, we've gone thousands of years without having this expectation that everybody around you is germ-free. And now suddenly there's this expectation. I can enforce an expectation on everybody around me, everyone in public, that they don't have any germs or that they don't have any, you know, anything that could contaminate me. And that's absurd. I mean, that's kind of, it's equating not, and it's not even not having the germs. It's using our specific method to, you know, to prevent infection. Equating that with, you know, being infected with some highly contagious disease, which, you know, there is a point where, you know, having an infectious disease and going out in public, I think, could legitimately be considered assault. If you have Ebola and you know it, and you go out and you start coughing on people, yeah, that's a violation. But there's so much ground in between that and not using our particular method for protecting yourself against all these other diseases. There's so much territory in between that, and yet people are equating the two. I mean, it's kind of scary. It's kind of the lack of thinking going on there, and the misinformation. I mean, there was this ad campaign, I don't know if you saw it last year, I think it was, where there's the big bad wolf. Granny turns into the big bad wolf because Granny's not vaccinated against pertussis. And the parents bring their little baby to visit Granny, and she's got a little cough, so she doesn't know she's got whooping cough, and she coughs on the baby and gives it whooping cough, and horrible Granny. Well, what's crazy, and this was put out by the manufacturers, I think it's GlaxoSmithKline, it put out by the manufacturers of the vaccine, who should know better. Because the crazy thing is, you can be vaccinated against pertussis. People who are vaccinated against it, even if it protects them against pertussis, they can still be carriers. They can still carry it and transmit it to other people. In fact, they're more likely to, because they're going to have lesser symptoms. They're going to be less symptomatic. They're less likely to be home sick, taking care of themselves, more likely to be out in public passing this on to other people. So the idea that getting vaccinated against pertussis is somehow protecting the people around you is completely backwards. And I know the people who make the vaccine know that. So, you know, this isn't just bad information, it's misinformation. And people are buying it up.
Is that the idea of shedding the virus? Like,
no, that's not even shedding. So there are vaccines that shed. So there are live vaccines that shed. Some of the vaccines are live and they can shed. Mm. This isn't even shedding. This is just, let's say you're vaccinated against whooping cough. And let's say it protects, what that does is it protects you to some degree against the symptoms of whooping cough. It doesn't prevent you from being a petri dish for the whooping cough bacteria and for passing that on to other people. Mm. That can still happen. Mm. So it's not shedding. Shedding is a little bit different, but it's crazy.
Yeah, going back to what you said about aggression being having an infectious disease and go out in public, it's kind of like I guess a person having an STD and knowing they have an STD and then intentionally having unprotected sex with people without telling them, right? And that's kind of a method of aggression, I guess. But
and yet, most people would agree that if you're out having sex with different people, it's a little bit incumbent on you to protect yourself. You don't get to, if somebody else gives you something and let's say they didn't know they had it, you don't then get to blame them. You don't get to say, oh, well, it's entirely your fault, because you do bear some responsibility for protecting yourself. And yet, with the whole vaccine debate, that seems to disappear. It's not only am I responsible for protecting myself, but you're responsible for protecting yourself, mm-hmm. and in the way that I say you have to, not in a way you choose. And regardless of the risks, I'm going to sit here and deny that there are any risks to my method, but regardless of those risks, I can demand that you take those risks on. Really hard. It's very difficult because there's so much corruption by these special interests, and a lot of that has to do with government involvement as well. I mean, it's all between the medical schools and the journals and the way this stuff is taught, and the fact that there are bodies of people who get to decide whether you can practice or not. There are bodies of people that get to decide what gets taught in the schools. That's just a bad mix. That's a bad mix for the truth, and it's a bad mix for science. I mean, I don't see how science can happen in an environment like that, where there's, where you have a body of people who have the political power to stop you from practicing or to stop you from teaching if you don't toe the line.
The pharmaceuticals, they pay for the ads in the journals, in the medical journals. Okay. They like donate to do the, or they control through the money that the universities that train the doctors. They bribe the politicians. They write their own regulations. They pay for the research that goes into their own pharmaceuticals and their own vaccines, and they control the results.
I mean, it's hard to, doesn't mean you don't look at the evidence, but it's very hard to untangle what's good and what's not.
Oh yeah. It's so much like 1984, where history is being erased and altered and manipulated and changed. I've really simplified my position on the vaccine. You can talk to people and say that, is this side effect, these people damaged, and what about the vaccine court you never heard about? You can't sue the doctors, and that's true. But it all comes down to choice, medical choice.
You own other people.
Yeah, if I don't have the choice to do with my own body or with my own kids, then who does? And if the state does, then what does that say? That the state owns my child?
Right. I mean, if you don't have that choice, then what choice do you have? What freedom do you have left? If they can decide what chemicals get to go inside your body, inside your children's bodies, then what freedom exactly do you have left?
Yeah, and another thing that I got into before I studied acupuncture was alternative cancer therapies. I was learning about the Gerson therapy and SEAC therapy, and then there's like one using baking soda treating cancer as a fungus. There's so many different ones. Royal Rife, there's another one. And what's interesting about all of them is how they ended. I mean, actually, the Gerson therapy is still around, but a lot of them, you know, it's like the common thing of like their laboratories were destroyed in a strange fire. All the files were destroyed, you know, and the person died under mysterious circumstances as well. And
yeah, a few of those lately too.
Oh yeah, the vaccine. Yeah, right. The doctors that died from the vaccine. Yeah, yeah, that's right. It's really pretty interesting. And the Gerson, I don't know if you know much about the Gerson therapy.
I don't. I've heard the term. I don't know much about it.
Oh, I've read a good deal about it and some great documentaries. It was made by this guy Max Gerson in the 1930s and 40s from Germany. And basically, I think he cured. It's basically the Gerson therapy is basically like raw fruit and vegetable juices. And also coffee enemas, you know, detoxing. So he combines, you know, really powerful juicing as well as detoxing through coffee enemas and other various supplements too. And so of course they cannot practice in the United States. Yeah, because if you say, you know, nobody can say they treat cancer except an oncologist, right? You know, the only legal ways to treat cancer are surgery, radiation, and chemo, right? And so if you say anything else, like, and as an acupuncturist or an herbalist, I can say that I treat the side effects of chemotherapy, but I can't say I treat cancer.
In cancer, right.
And so...
Oh, you get a little cell with bars on it.
Yeah. Right, So the people, the practitioners who do this, they have to leave the country, and so you have the clinic is in Mexico, and then there's one in Hungary, but it's really fascinating because the people who go to these clinics are basically the people that have been turned away from their oncologist, and basically says, you know, we have done everything, there's nothing more to do, I can't help you,
you're a hopeless case,
get your affairs in order. You know, that's it. Prepare to die. And so, and a lot of them say, no, I don't accept that. And so they go online, they find out the Gerson therapy, and they try. And so these people, they get the worst, absolute worst cases, the terminal cases that nobody else wants to treat. And they have like an 80-85% success rate of turning these things around. It's really a fascinating thing. And it's just so tragic how, you know, you can see, you know, that's just one aspect of how a government agency suppresses competition, you know, the FDA. That's what I was studying a lot because as I got into acupuncture and Eastern nutrition and herbal medicine. And so, yeah, that was my in to this kind of stuff, you know, was learning about the FDA.
Yeah, the FDA is absolutely evil. It's just, don't even get me started on that.
That's just one, and you know, not to mention the fact, you know, talking about the FDA, like you know, the war on drugs, for example, like how many people die from, like, you know, marijuana, maybe cocaine and heroin also, as compared to prescription medication properly prescribed and properly used, abused.
What is it? Iatrogenic death is now the second largest or third largest cause of death.
Yeah, next to like heart disease and cancer or something.
Isn't that
amazing?
And how many people have died because they didn't have access to medical marijuana?
Yeah.
As an example.
Yeah. So it's really tragic. So, let me tell you a real quick story that happened to me and my kids regarding vaccines. So my daughter goes to you know, we signed her up for gymnastics, her and my son, and we were going to this one place for a few weeks. And then this one time I was there and I was sitting in the waiting room with these two other mothers. And you know how, you know, when you're talking to mothers and they say, you know, natural questions are, how old is your child? Oh, my child's 5. Okay, so he's in first grade. And I say, no, he's homeschooling. Ah, he's homeschooled. So we got this interesting conversation about that. Oh, by the way, both these parents are public school teachers.
Oh, boy.
So that was a good conversation. I kept it civil, you know. I'm pretty good at that, at keeping, you know, very contentious topics to be calm and peaceful, and I try to be non-confrontational and everything. And I think they were getting emotional, but I try to calm things down, talk slowly, you know, don't raise your voice and everything. And then got into vaccines, right? And I forget how, but one of the women asked me, "Do you vaccinate?" And I said, "No." And so the other woman said, "Oh, I guess it's fine because, you know, because we're all vaccinated, so we're all protected." And the other woman's like, "No, it's not fine because your kids are putting our kids at danger." And then again, it sounds like a, you know, intimidating, threatening conversation. I kind of explained myself very calmly and gently, and And I thought I ended it well. And I got her name. We shook hands afterwards, and she left. And then later, before the next week of the gymnastics class, the owner called me and said, "I want to talk to you."
Oh my God! No way.
And so she said basically that those two women, actually all the women in the class, they're all friends, and all their kids go to daycare. I guess the first grade is in the same place, and they're all vaccinated, of course. And so they said that if he continues to go with his kids, we're not going to go. We're all not going to go. And so basically, the owner, she was saying, you put me in a very difficult situation as a business owner. I can't afford to lose all that business. And so she's like,
can she afford a lawsuit for discrimination?
Okay,
you wouldn't do that.
Okay,
but
hold on, let me get to that. So I asked her, can I do another class? Like, she has different classes in the week, and she's like, no, because what if one of the other women recognizes you and says, that's the guy?
Oh my God.
So, I mean, I was just laughing. I'm like, wow, I couldn't believe this. And I did mention, like, couldn't it consider be like profiling or, bigotry? But I'm like, yeah, all right. I mean, I understand as a business owner, you make these kind of hard decisions. And, she was telling me very clearly, like, I don't really care what you do in your private life, but this is mainly a business decision. I don't have any opinion in this matter, things like that, which is very business.
Right, I get it. But at the same time, I mean, if you had wanted to be a jerk about it, you could have sued.
Then, of course, my wife said that, like, well, we should sue them. And she's getting angry and everything. And I'm like, well, I mean, first of all, as a volunteer, as an anarchist, and then using the same. And then second of all, the other thing is, as a business, I respect the right to dissociate, right? I don't feel like any business, I don't feel like I deserve the service of anybody, and so for somebody to turn me away for whatever reason, right? I mean, so it's just a freedom of dissociation, and although it can be very painful, and when it's due to ignorance, it's like when, in businesses turn away, like gay people or black people or any kind of Muslim people, it's just like as individuals, we have the freedom to associate with whomever we want, right? Same thing when you have a business. You have the freedom to associate and do business with whoever you want and not do business with whoever you want. So it was kind of difficult for my wife to – but yeah.
Wow, what a story, though. That's on some of the groups – I'm not on Facebook that much anymore, but I've been on a few parents groups, and I've heard similar stories to that where people have run into things at their schools or in places like that where they've just run into some, irate parents who find out. I mean, most people I know just, they don't talk about it. They don't say whether they vaccinate or not. And it's kind of scary because it's this ignorance that's fueled, deliberately fueled. I mean, I think it's been created by the people who want to push vaccines. Mm-hmm. But it's this ignorance and people just eat it up. And I understand it because I understand, you can't, nobody has the time to look deeply into every issue that's out there. There are too many issues. There's too much information. No one has the time for that. But the fact that people just soak it up, don't question it, don't say, well, you know what? I haven't really, all I've heard is what CBS News told me. And, I know they're, corporate media hacks and I'm not going to take their word for everything. Mm. There's not a healthy skepticism. There's just this like mob mentality, grab the pitchforks and start, running towards the end. It's just, it's a little frightening because I don't think it would take much. I really don't think it would take much, to push people just a little bit more and have things get really ugly. It's that same ignorant mob mentality. It's the same thing that, was once used against people of other ethnicities or, historically has just been used in really ugly ways. And it's like, we haven't learned anything. We haven't learned not to behave that way.
Yeah. There's another way that I kind of learned about recently of how to look at the news, the mainstream news. And so if you are skilled in a particular field, whatever it is, I don't know, writing, or like, say I'm skilled in acupuncture, and I look at the mainstream news and I see a segment they do on acupuncture, I can immediately point out all of the imperfections and inconsistencies that they make, right? All the errors that they say, because they're not experts in acupuncture, right? And so I understand that, right? And so I don't take their word for that. But for some strange reason, if I look at anything, or like I say, the common person looks at everything else that's not their specialty, they're like, that must be right.
right. Which is crazy. I mean, even if you're looking at things that aren't your specialty, you should at least have sort of the knowledge and just having been around long enough to know that everything out there is put out by somebody with an agenda.
Right.
And that doesn't mean it's all false, but you can't just take things at face value. I mean, that just seems to be a skill that's missing in this country anyway.
Yeah, and it's so sad how people, they just accept these narratives without questioning, and especially the ones that do significant damage to other people. Generally accepted perspectives about Muslims or, you know, gays or blacks or Mexicans or whatever, in which a simple conversation with some of these individuals would quickly rectify.
Right, but I don't need that because I heard it on Fox News, so I've got my truth. Thank you very much.
Right. I don't want to keep you any longer. So please let people know where they can find your work if they want to follow you.
Yeah, so right now, www.bretigne.com, B-R-E-T-I-G-N-E. I don't post all the time. I'm working on bigger projects and kids too, so, you know, I don't do this all the time. But that's where my stuff is. I'm also on liberty.me. You can, if you're not a member of liberty.me, you can join and find me there. Twitter, at Bretigne, B-R-E-T-I-G-N-E. This is up on Amazon. I'm hoping to get an open bazaar, to set up an open bazaar shop at some point soon, and I'll be selling stuff there, but I think they're still in beta, and I'm not really ready to set that up anyway. So, yeah, Facebook, Twitter, my blog are probably the best places, and liberty.me. There's actually a whole collection of my articles on my page on liberty.me.
Cool. Yes, please check out her stuff. Really, really awesome content. You know, we need more content creators, I think, in the liberty genre. You know, I interview like rappers and authors and writers and podcasters and, you know, YouTubers, and I think it's just awesome when I see all these people spreading the message in different platforms.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff out there now. There's so much more than, you know, even like 10, 20 years ago. There's a lot of good stuff coming out.
Yeah, it makes me really happy. So if anybody wants to help me out, you can do so through Bitcoin, PayPal, or Patreon. The links are below. That's patreon.com/peacefulanarchism to help me out. $1 a show is all I ask. If you see value in this content, please feel free to donate, right? Value for value is what capitalism is about, right? Voting with your dollars, the only democracy I support. You know, if you see something beautiful in the world, you donate or you patronize it. And that's how you propagate beauty. that's the free market capitalist way, right? But awesome conversation, Bretigne. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
No problem. So this is Peaceful Anarchism on the Voluntary Virtues Network and thuseasofliberty.com and theconsciousresistance.com. Wishing everyone have a wonderful day. Take care. Bye.
Cell 411 is a free app for Android and iOS that replaces government-controlled 911. Cell 411 allows you to preset a group of friends or private organizations to show up in any emergency. Cell 411 is a nightmare for the state because it proves their so-called services aren't needed. Cell 411 has had thousands of installs, and of course it's covered by the BIPCOT no government license. Cell 411 because your friends won't shoot you when you're in trouble. Without the government, who would build the emergency services? You and Cell 411. Get it today at getcell411.com. That's getcell411.com.